Welcome to this super secret episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, never before released in public. Today, I'm going to be talking about 8 things you must know when starting your first SaaS. And I don't say must lightly. Realize I could say 8 things you should know or 8 things you should consider. But I consider these 8 things that I'm going to talk about pretty fundamental to getting started and building and launching a SaaS application. And what you'll notice is there are almost no absolutes about tech stack, about specific marketing approaches, about specific ways to do things. Most of them are mindset shifts, ideas, thoughts on finding others who are ahead of you to interact with, ask questions of, and frankly, some encouragement to learn, but more encouragement to get out and ship things into the world. And where do these 8 things come from? I think they come from a couple places. One, they come from my experience getting started, honestly, 20 years ago, trying to get started and really starting to get a bit of traction about 15 years ago, and growing and owning and acquiring literally dozens of websites and software, small software businesses, and then stair-stepping my way up to into SaaS with a B2C SaaS in the wedding space, and then stair-stepping that up into a SaaS in the SEO space, and then stair-stepping that to Drip, a SaaS in the ESP space, each one 5 times, 10 times larger than the previous one. And during that experience, I made a lot of mistakes. And some of those mistakes, I think, were kind of inevitable for the time, because in the early 2000s, there weren't a lot of the resources I'm going to mention today. There wasn't a model for me to look ahead and say, oh, I want to pattern myself after that person who has done this thing. There was no one talking about really bootstrapping software companies. You know, it was all venture capital. And really the person that I followed was Joel Spolsky. He was the only one I knew. He was with Fog Creek Software. He was the only one that I knew that was talking about building products and not raising venture capital. And, you know, what's funny is he then went on to start Stack Exchange, Stack Overflow, raising venture capital, Trello, raising venture capital. And I think he's on to something else now that raised venture capital. So it's funny and ironic. I also listened to Paul Graham a lot. I read his essays in the early 2000s before Y Combinator came about. And he was always really about building sane businesses, you know, ambitious, but he was not into the whole Silicon Valley, at least at the time, you know, into the Silicon Valley craziness of trying to build these massive businesses and take out a bunch of funding just to shoot for the moon. Obviously, some of the companies he's funded have done that, but still a pretty pragmatic individual. And so I come from those roots. And over the course of 5 or 10 years, as I was making mistakes, I think the advice that I'm giving today would have been very helpful for me. The other place that I pull these from are the literally thousands of entrepreneurs that I have spoken with over the years, a lot of aspiring founders and early stage founders who are still trying to figure it out. And I'm seeing them make the same mistakes over and over, really. You start to see the same patterns and the same thought processes. And how many conversations have I had at conferences and people emailing me through this podcast and through my book, as well as all the companies that I've invested in and advised and mentored. And so these 8 things are advice I want to give to you today if you're an early stage SaaS founder. And if you're working on your first SaaS or about to start, these are things that I hope will be helpful on your journey. So let's dive in. Number one is to build your tool belt, to study a little and ship a lot. And what I mean by a tool belt is when you start out, you have almost no skills in terms of building a product. You might be a developer listening to this, or you might be a copywriter, or you might be a designer, but you tend to be pretty focused and narrow in your skills. And know that you're going to need a whole tool belt of skills. If you have the Batman utility belt, he doesn't just have one thing on there. It's not just a nightstick or a little ninja throwing star shaped like a bat. He has 8, 10, 12 different things on that tool belt. And that is what you're going to have to develop over time. And you're not going to develop them all at once. So if you're a developer right now and you're looking to build software, cool. You know how to build software. Do you know how to manage DevOps? You might have to learn that early on. Do you know how to build a really nice user interface? I know you know how to, you know, if you're a developer, you know how to build the code, to write the code to make the back end work, but do you know how to make a product that's intuitive for people to use? Well, you're probably going to want to study up on that a little bit. Do you know how to write copy? How to write copy that compels people to buy, makes it them interested in your product? Do you know how to do email support? Do you know how to position a product? Do pay-per-click ads? Do organic search optimization? Do you know how to create successful integrations from a marketing perspective? Do you know how to do sales? Do you know how to hire a virtual assistant? You know, there's all these skills. And the thing is, you're not going to learn them all at once. And so when I say build your tool belt, I mean, put the tool belt on, put your one skill, two skills there, and realize that as the new ones come up, you're going to need to learn them just in time. And you're going to need to study and research and ask, and I'm going to talk about in some of the later items here, who you can ask and who to have in line to, you know, which resources to go to, because in general, going to Google can have mixed results. You know, you need to consider your sources. But the idea is to study a little and ship a lot, because I've said this over and over that doing things in public creates opportunity. And so while you should read some books on startups, while you should listen to some podcasts on startups, while you should perhaps watch some talk videos from conferences like MicroConf or Business Software, you can't spend all your time doing that. You shouldn't spend all your time doing that, because it's just a ton of consumption and it's not actually getting out there and learning it. And so doing things in public creates opportunity. And as you find yourself trying to validate a product for the first time, for example, I would read maybe one book or listen to a few podcasts on customer validation, customer development. I would maybe watch it. Like, I have a talk where it's in the MicroConf YouTube channel, and it's called like Idea Validation to 7K in Monthly Recurring Revenue. And the whole first half of that talk is how I validated it. Jason Cohen has talked about how he validated WP Engine. There's just a couple data points you need. You don't need 10 stories of how to do this. You need one or two that resonate with you, and then go do that. Or you can go to Indie Hackers and look at, you know, a few stories of how people did it. But again, hearing 20 stories about how people validate is not helpful. You need to then go do it in public. And then you know what you'll learn? You'll learn, A, whether your idea, you know, at least have more of a data point. You'll never know 100%. But you have more of an idea, and you'll learn that skill of idea validation, and you'll probably put your own spin on it. And then you say, okay, so now I need a landing page, because I, as I've said, start marketing the day you start coding. So now I need a landing page. Well, I need to learn how to write some copy. So what am I going to do? Well, I'm probably going to go to Leanna Patch or Joanna Wiebe, two phenomenal copywriters. Joanna has written multiple books at copyhackers.com, and you can download or buy them and, you know, do whatever and consume a few of those, and then that's it. You're set, because hearing more info about copywriting isn't going to help you. It's just going to get your head spinning. So now go write copy. Go write the first version of that landing page. Get it out there. Come back to it 2 days later. Read the headline. Realize it's terrible. Rewrite it and then run it by some people. And again, I'll later on, you know, in terms of some communities and some folks that you can ask for feedback, but that's how you grow. So that's what I mean when I say build your tool belt. I mean, you develop one skill at a time as you go along the way. And just to temper expectations, it took me, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 months to learn Facebook ads and get really good at them. It took me several months to learn SEO back in the day. It took me several years over the course of, I'd say about 3 years, to learn enough of a tool belt that I could consistently and repeatedly grow software products through different channels. And, you know, it's going to take that learning for you too. I often find that people with technical skills downplay the importance or perhaps the experience needed to do softer skills well. Things like marketing or sales, positioning, copywriting, those are skills that people develop over years. And so it's not like you're going to jump in and be amazing at it from the start. So give yourself time and build out your tool belt one batarang at a time. Item number two, I think you must know when starting your first SaaS, is to take the stairs. What I mean by this is I have this concept. You've likely heard of it if you've listened to the podcast for any length of time. It's called the stair-step approach to bootstrapping. And we'll link this up in the guide that accompanies this episode. You can also just Google the phrase. It's number one rank for that. The idea behind stair-stepping is not to start with a huge, ambitious idea. I didn't build an email service provider and compete with MailChimp, AWeber, and Infusionsoft as my first app when I was a green developer coming off of, you know, my second or third job with no experience in copywriting and marketing. What I did was I built small revenue-generating software products and learned how to build the tool belt, right? And this ties right in with that concept of building the tool belt, because what stair-stepping does, if you pick a small one-time sale product or a small little SaaS utility and it generates, you know, a little bit of money each month, it allows you to learn and to build that tool belt out in a situation where the stakes aren't so high. Because again, if you're going to go compete in a majorly competitive space, the stakes are really high and it's really hard to compete and you're going to get discouraged. And trying to shoot for the moon as your first effort can have negative repercussions for a lot of reasons, because you can waste a bunch of time and you can get discouraged. So instead of trying to do that, pick a little add-on, a WordPress plugin, an ebook, a Magento add-on, a Photoshop add-on, a Shopify app store, you know, any of these app stores are great places where you don't have to learn all the marketing, but you do need to learn a little bit of support, a little bit of copywriting, a little bit of positioning, and you can rely on their distribution to get you. This is not going to be a multi-million dollar business. Almost positive it won't be. But if you get to $500 a month, $1,000 a month, $2,000 a month, you gain a tremendous amount. You gain skills, right? You build the tool belt. You gain some income that you can then use to invest in your own education, or you can use to invest in building or buying your next product. You gain the experience of doing it. You gain the confidence you can do it, because that's a huge issue at the start. I remember I had that as well. Like, is this even going to work? Am I capable of doing this? And if you have a spouse or significant other, partner who relies on you, you can build the confidence in them that you're capable of doing this. Because if you go to your spouse today and say, I want to quit my job and build a SaaS company, what is he or she going to say? Like, why? That's crazy. But if you show him or her, hey, I have this app that does $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 a month. Oh, and I have two or three more over here, and I can almost cover my full-time income. And then I'm going to parlay all those up into this larger SaaS app. That's what I did. And I've seen dozens of people doing it. Again, if you go to this blog post, you can read example after example of folks who have started small with these one-time sale apps, and they figure out one or two traffic channels and they build that tool belt. And then they just add another. They have 3, 4, 5 apps. Oh, hey, now I'm making 10 grand a month. I can quit the job. I own all of my time and I have this great skill set and I have perhaps a little audience, right? You have at least customers. You probably built a network with other software founders by this point. Probably have a tiny bit of notoriety in any communities you're involved in. It allows you in a weird way to kind of create your own luck. And, you know, I think about success as kind of three factors: hard work, luck, and skill. And stair-stepping allows you to build those skills. It forces you to do some hard work, which I think is good and healthy. And it allows you to, I think, maybe create a little bit of your own luck along the way. And it allows you to have these small wins that I think you should celebrate, these milestones, such that you're not trying to jump to the major leagues. You're going to little league and then to junior high ball and then to high school and then to college ball and then single A, double A, triple A, and then to the majors, to the show, as they call it. You don't try to leap up to the roof of a 10-story building. You take the stairs, and that's the stair-step approach to bootstrapping. Item number 3 is to find one or two mentors, 3 tops, but no more. When I say mentors, I'm actually doing air quotes, because you may never speak to this person. They may not know that they are your mentor, but if they're doing things in public, if they're blogging or podcasting or writing books or doing conference talks, and they resonate with you, and they are someone who gives advice that makes sense, and I'm going to go through a couple criteria in a second about how to determine who to listen to. But even if you never talk to them, or maybe you meet them years down the line and you thank them for, you know, for all the mentorship that they've given you and that you've built a multiple 6-figure or multiple 7-figure businesses, and you thank them, that's enough. But the reason I bring that up is that happens to me relatively frequently. People will email me or introduce themselves and they'll say, hey, I bought your book, started listening to your podcast, and now I have a 7-figure app and we've never spoken and I never emailed you, but I want to thank you for, you know, all the advice and the encouragement over the years. And I really used a lot of stuff that you've done on the podcast or in your book or through MicroConf. And that means a tremendous amount to me. I have a, you know, a label in Gmail where I keep all those and they have a huge impact on me. And they're one of the major reasons that I do what I do here, because I've made 10 times more money from building software companies than I have from talking about, you know, or teaching people about how to build software companies. That's always been the hobby, the side project, and really the thing. I enjoy it a lot. And, you know, the feedback and stuff is super meaningful to me. But all that to say, when I say find 1, 2, or 3 mentors, tops, no more, I do find that people get distracted and they wander all over the place and they try to follow 10 different people, and different people have different approaches, different people have different motivations, different people have different experience levels. And what I've found is that if you focus and you just try to find 1, 2, or 3 people who really resonate with you in terms of their approach, in terms of their goals, you know, are they trying to build the next Uber and you want to build an awesome 7-figure, you know, lifestyle SaaS, then don't listen to them. This is where you have to align that. The criteria I use for who I listen to are, number 1, have they done it before? Like, it is what I want to do. Have they done it before? Then did they do it again? And this is a high bar, because there are people out there who have had one success. And some of them, it's pure skill and they could do it again, but you don't know that. And others, they got really lucky. And I don't want to listen to someone who thinks they know how what made them successful, but they don't. And it's hard to tell until someone has repeated successes. So as an example, Jason Cohen has built 3 or 4 companies to 7, 8, 9 figures in revenue. David Cancel has built 5. I think he's maybe even had 5 exits. Heaton Shaw has had 3 or 4. I think it's 3 7-figure, not including his agency. So I would throw 4 in there. I've built 7 businesses to either 6 or 7 figures in annual revenue. There are people out there who have done this over and over, and they're methodical and they have a framework for it. And they know what made them successful, because I have talked to people who are successful. And when they tell me why, or they tell me why they succeeded, I don't think they're right. I think that they are misappropriating or misinterpreting what actually happened. And until you've done it 2, 3, 4 times, it's really hard to tell. Another criteria I use is, does that person have a reasonable personal life? Meaning, do they treat people well? Do they seem to have like a happy family, if that's something, you know, that you want? Or are they just generally a happy person? Or are they kind of a miserable SOB and they torch all their personal relationships? Because for me, someone with a wrecked personal life, it tells me that they may have had to do things to get to their success that I'm not going to be willing to do. And that ties into this last one. Do you want to be like them? And are you willing to do what they did to be successful? So do you want to be like Jeff Bezos? And are you willing to run a company like he does? And I'm not judging either way that Amazon is run, good or bad. It's debatable. But when you look at it from your perspective, do you want to make the decisions he has and treat people the way that he has to get to where he does? And if you don't, then don't do that. If you look at a founder who has built 7 or 8-figure SaaS business and you think, man, they've been ethical and that's how I want to be. They seem to treat people well. They're generally nice. They're generally whatever. I mean, there's criteria that you have in your head, and some of these matter more to some people than others. And that's where it's a taste thing. That's why I can't tell you who to follow, you know, and which of these folks to kind of strike up this remote mentorship relationship with, because I do believe that a lot of this is a personal choice. But I would encourage you not to find 5 or 10 people to listen to and really try to find 1 or 2 who's talking, you know, about the things that will help you get there. The 4th thing I think you must know when starting your first SaaS is hope for luck, but don't count on it. This is back to my hard work, luck, and skill. There will be some luck along the way. There will be some bad luck. And certainly if you put in the hard work and you develop the skills over time, you get lucky. There's an old quote from, I believe it's Thomas Jefferson, that said, "The harder I work, the luckier I get." And I love that quote. It's like, put in the hours, put in the time, build the skills, and it'll be amazing. As you build your business, you'll have these incredibly lucky moments. It'll be like, wow, that one famous person with 500,000 Twitter followers just stumbled upon my app, tweeted about it, and it got me a bunch of interest and got me a partnership that then escalated to this, and then an article was written about it, and it all comes back to that one moment. And it'll seem like it was just dumb luck, but you'll know better, and you'll know that that wouldn't have happened if you hadn't put in years of time building your tool belt and building your skill set and putting in the work to get there. 5 is to find a community. A big mistake I made when I was starting out is I thought I could do everything on my own. And to be fair, there wasn't a community. There was no Indie Hackers. There was no MicroConf. There was no Dynamite Circle. I was just blogging out there and wondering, hey, is anyone else thinking about solo software entrepreneurs? And then, oh, hey, you know, a couple years after I started, like Patrick McKenzie, Patio 11 on the internet, was blogging, and he and I had emailed a few times. And there wasn't a ton of a community. And that is one of the reasons I went on to write a book on this topic, because there really wasn't one that I thought was very good. Start this podcast with my former co-host, Mike, because there was no one talking about this stuff. And then, of course, start, you know, the community. In effect, the community for this podcast is MicroConf. And that's really what it is. They're joined at the hip. And so had there been a community back when I was doing it, I would have been interested in it. And so here's some communities that no matter where in the world you live, you can find like-minded people that can give you those landing page critiques that I talked about earlier, that can give you feedback about, you know, maybe who to listen to or which resources to look at to learn a particular thing. And so one is indiehackers.com. I've long been an admirer of Cortland and Channing and what they've done there. That is an online community, and they have in-person meetups as well. MicroConf, of course, as I said, is the community attached to this podcast. And at MicroConf, we started as in-person events. We do many in-person events a year, and hopefully we have an event that's close enough to you to be able to attend. But even if we don't, we also have an online community. It's in a Slack channel. It's called MicroConf Connect. And there are well more than 1,000 people, founders, aspiring founders, ambitious people who are nice and respectful. And we've curated the heck out of that list. And it's a moderated group. It's totally free. MicroConfConnect.com if you want to get involved there. And in addition, of course, we have all the videos. That's less of a community, more of education. But, you know, our YouTube channel, youtube.com/microconf, is the biggest collection I know in the world of talks and videos and education for free that's aimed at aspiring SaaS founders and SaaS founders and self-funded founders and indie-funded founders. And it's just a good repository. So MicroConf is no longer just in-person events. There's an entire community built around that as well. Another one is the Dynamite Circle. And Dynamite Circle is attached to the Tropical MBA podcast that's hosted by Dan and Ian. And that's more of a digital nomad. And there's a little bit of software, I'd say about 10, 15, 20% software. And the rest is, it's a lot more e-commerce and courses and that kind of stuff, but definitely a high quality community with high quality hosts. And there are certainly other communities out there that will spring up after I've recorded this. I've seen many, many come and go over the years, online, in person. And you just have to find the one that fits you and resonates with you, I'll say, and go in and be part of it. You know, and you don't have to do it every day and don't let it be a huge time waste, but be involved until you know kind of what you can ask and learn from the folks around you. And these folks, I think, can really help drive you forward. Item number 6 is to join a mastermind. If you don't know, a mastermind group is just a group of 2, 3, or 4 people who meet typically remotely, although you can do it in person, but oftentimes it's through video chat like Zoom or Skype. And typically you meet, some groups meet once a week, but I think most meet twice a month. And I'm in one that meets once a month. But the idea is to get together with other founders who some are slightly ahead of you, and they can help keep you accountable. They can help give you direct advice. They can help give you, again, the advice on your landing pages and your copy and what to do when this customer flames you out and where to go to hire support people. You know, it's really direct one-on-one guidance from people who have either been in your shoes or are in your shoes now. And there's just something about having that lifeline and having that story, the narrative, where people are on the same page with you. You don't have to tell them a year's worth of history of your app. They just know where you are, what you've been, and having that context makes it so much easier to be able to easily give advice in a short amount of time. And that's one of the reasons that with MicroConf, we actually provide a mastermind matchmaking service. So, I mean, my first recommendation is if you have been to in-person events or you're part of an online community and you know some folks there, that I would connect with them. And that's how I've always done it. But if you don't, come to microconf.com, look for our mastermind matchmaking service, and we will take some info about you, your interests, time zones, and that kind of stuff, and mash it all together and figure out some folks for you to get into a mastermind with. And we also have a couple guides that we've written up on how to organize and run those. And I want to be clear, I'm not saying you should join a mastermind because MicroConf does it, because MicroConf does it for free. And we actually pay for a white label service. So it's out of our pocket. It's a net negative to connect you with that mastermind. But the reason we do it is because I believe it is so important to the success of founders to have the support of other folks who are going through the same stuff. Number 7 and 8 are some more direct advice. Number 7 is to lean towards B2B, to lean towards business-to-business SaaS, and lean away from business to consumer. I've done both. I've had several products that sold to consumers. And what I found is the consumers tend to be quite price sensitive. They tend to churn quicker. It's hard to have a repeatable sales process. You need large scale funnels, in essence. You need a lot of folks coming through. I'm not saying you shouldn't do B2C, but B2C ideas, they're like candy, right? They're so appealing. And they seem fun, and they're like the first thing everyone comes up with, the first thing that all of us come up with, because that's what we're exposed to, you know, on a day-to-day basis. But the general wisdom has become, and this really came out of the first few MicroConfs, as we brought more and more speakers in, and each of us spoke about our experience, people who had run, including me, who had run or were running B2C businesses were saying, you know what, I wouldn't do this again. And I want to sell to other businesses and not consumers. It's just a more repeatable process. I believe there's much higher likelihood of succeeding. I actually talked with Cortland Allen of Indie Hackers, and you know, it's just one data point, but he basically said, if you look across all of the apps and the projects that are making money that are listed on Indie Hackers, that on average, the B2B apps are making 4 times what B2C are. And again, that's not an unequivocal data point, but I do believe, you know, if you want to optimize for kind of success, in the long term, you know, the big apps, a lot of the big ones we see are B2B. To find a large B2C SaaS company is really almost non-existent, I would say. I've yet to hear of an example of that. Because even if you look at something like Dropbox, really they make most of their money from their enterprise deals, even though they do cater to consumers as well. And the eighth thing, and of course there are more than eight things, but I wanted to keep this episode to a consumable length. My advice on this one is to watch these 10 talks, these conference talks. And it's in a playlist called Building Your First SaaS, The Ultimate Crash Course. And a couple of these talks are short. They're like 10 or 12 minutes. So it's a few hours of time to do this. And I would actually recommend that you get a browser plugin and 2x or 1.7x to kind of consume it fast. And frankly, if you don't want to watch the Q&A, you can cut even more time off. This is, of course, the efficiency freak in me because I'm, you know, watching video is not something that I tend to want to do. But I basically combed through hundreds of MicroConf talks, and we've had just the best of the best on that stage. The names that I could throw out, Jason Frieden, Patrick Collison, and Heaton Shaw, and Steli Efti, and Joanna Wiebe, and Leanna Patch, and, you know, just people who are super knowledgeable, who've done it, and who can lend tons of insight. And I went through hundreds of talks, and producer Xander limited me to 10. And he said, find 10 talks that essentially are a masterclass about building your first SaaS. And they go in order, right? It starts with idea validation. It talks about some building and launching, and then there's some growth tactics in there. There's customer support. There's kind of the mental health side of things. And I'm really proud of this playlist and the talks in it. And I think that they will provide a lot of value. And even if you don't normally watch conference talks, I truly believe that these are some of the best talks ever on building an ambitious SaaS product, but not doing it in the go big or go home. I have to raise venture capital. I need to burn out my family and my relationships and myself. But looking at it as the founders that we are, you know, it's the startups for the rest of us, the MicroConf ethos of I want to do ambitious things without decimating the rest of my life. So I hope you found a lot of value in this episode. I tried to make it pretty dense and give you the best knowledge that I have looking back on my career and of all the learnings that I've had from the founder conversations and advising and everything I've done over the years. I hope you enjoy the accompanying guide that touches on a lot of these points and obviously has the links that I've mentioned. And if you do have questions, obviously you can always send them to me at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Or if you just want to give me feedback about this episode, if you want to tell me things you learned from it, things you implemented, it's always good to hear feedback either way. So thanks so much for listening. Obviously, if you haven't subscribed to Startups for the Rest of Us, you should do that now. And I will talk to you next Tuesday morning.